So the, as the Central African Republic case shows, the serious member states of the United Nations have to take hold of things, and they need to move in and figure out when an allegation of sexual abuse is first brought to light, what are the mandated protocols, how do we respond, and then what do the various agencies and institutions within the entities within the UN have to do? Should UNICEF, and my answer is absolutely yes, should they have to move in immediately to protect children from further abuse? The whole UN needs to be looked at from top to bottom by an external commission.
Paula Donovan, thanks so much for being with us, co-director of AIDS Free World, which has launched the Code Blue campaign seeking to end sexual exploitation abuse by UN military and non-military peacekeeping personnel. That does it for our show. Our website's democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a film screening of COINTELPRO 101 Monday, June 1st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. COINTELPRO 101 is a one-hour documentary produced by the Freedom Archives explaining an illegal FBI program coined as the Counterintelligence Program, spearheaded by J. Edgar Hoover, that targeted revolutionaries of the 60s and 70s. There will also be a presentation of ongoing local work and Q&A session after the film. Again, that's COINTELPRO 101 Monday, June 1st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is proud to partner with Hopworks Urban Brewery for their Community Tap program. Every month, Hopworks features a local nonprofit organization, and May's Community Tap is your community radio, KBOO. Hopworks is located at 2944 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. For more information on Hopworks and their Community Tap program, you can go to kboo.fm/hub.
KBOO Portland, 5:01 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Lentz International Farmers Market, a program of Zinger Farm, every Sunday at Southeast 92nd and Foster from 10 to 3. Opening day is this Sunday, May 31st. Lentz Farmers Market offers the Food Scouts Farmers Market Club for Kids, a community produce booth open to home gardeners, cooking demos, and live music. More information at lentzfarmersmarket.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, local hip-hop artist Glenn Waco is arrested while trying to help a gunshot victim at last Thursday on Alberta Street last night.
We'll get an update on the houseless sweeps that continue today for the third straight day in Southeast Portland.
Hunger-striking prisoners in Mexico and Palestine say they are willing to starve to death to bring attention to their respective causes.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 29th, 2015. I'm Alan Montecelio.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund. The Last Thursday Art Festival on Alberta has become a tremendously popular attraction for Northeast Portlanders, but the festivities last evening were marred by the sound of gunfire when a young man fired several rounds into a crowd of people near Northeast 20th in Alberta. Three people were injured, a 25-year-old woman and two 15-year-old boys. The Portland Police Bureau describes their injuries as non-life-threatening. Police arrested 16-year-old Teron Walker Jr., who confessed today to charges of attempted murder and misuse of a firearm. The police also arrested Marcus Cooper and Lauren Ware on charges of interfering with a peace officer, disorderly conduct, and harassment and harassment and resisting arrest. The men are both activists with a local group, Don't Shoot PDX, and were reported by bystanders to be trying to help the victims of the shooting at the time of their arrests. Ware is better known to many in the local hip-hop community by his stage name Glenn Waco. He tweeted this morning, quote, "I woke up with that kid's blood on me. Hipsters woke up with selfies in their phones," referring to festival goers who used their phones to photograph themselves next to the crime scene last night. The arrest sparked the hashtag Free Marcus Cooper Twitter campaign, and about 50 protesters rallied outside the courthouse today during his arraignment.
A rally to protest the passage and signing of Oregon's new background check law will take place in the state capitol tomorrow at noon. 1,000 people have signed up to attend the, quote, SB 941 I Will Not Comply rally, including several motorcycle gangs that are coming to Salem en masse for the event. Several people on the Facebook page have commented that they plan to violate Oregon law against carrying loaded weapons and will attend the rally with their weapons fully loaded. The bill was signed on May the 11th by Governor Kate Brown, who gave the justification that its enactment would, quote, keep our kids, schools, and communities safe. The bill requires anyone selling a gun to a non-relative to have a background check conducted on the person who's purchasing the gun.
The Portland police this week began a comprehensive sweep of homeless encampments near the city's bridges and in the Central East Side Industrial District. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg has more.
The large-scale crackdown on houseless encampments this week has been especially focused on the Central East Side District south of Burnside near the Willamette River. The sweep is slated to last for weeks and is the biggest effort coordinated by the city since 2013, when police targeted houseless people sleeping near City Hall and encampments on the city's east side. Portland Police Bureau spokesman Sergeant Pete Simpson said the sweeps are in coordination with nonprofits like Join and are intended to connect individuals to social services. But he said that the houseless people contacted could be subject to arrest over outstanding warrants or cited for violating the city's camping ban. Keith Davis with Multnomah County Cop Watch has been documenting the sweeps and said that he's witnessed police roughing people up as they evict people from their makeshift homes.
I actually talked to a pregnant homeless girl that I know yesterday and today, and she was talking about how she was using the bathroom under the Hawthorne Bridge where they were sleeping homeless camps. And she came out of the bathroom and these two cops, like, they tackled her and threw her to the ground and said that she gave them a false ID the previous day. But she actually told me that it was someone else that they were looking for that looks somewhat similar, but not really. So the police are, you know, doing stuff like throwing pregnant homeless women on the ground.
According to Street Roots newspaper, the largest shelter agency in the city, Transition Projects, has a 5-month waiting list for men, and there's a 7-month waiting list for women trying to seek shelter. Just 2 nights ago, a houseless man died on the stoop of St. Stephen's Church at Southwest 13th and Clay, waiting for the church to open in the morning. The individual was in his 30s, was a white male who a number of people knew as CJ. Documents found at the scene indicated his real name may have been Daniel. His death was reported to have been preceded by convulsions. Keith Davis with Multnomah County Cop Watch says he believes these sweeps are part of an intentional campaign to displace people to make way for gentrification.
As a formerly homeless person, I know a lot about the whole problems and stuff. The real problem here is the mayor, the county commissioners, the police department. All these different people, they don't want to fix the problem of homelessness because it's become a big industry to them. And they're tapping into the homeless community for job security and revenue.
Tyler Bristow of Portland Anarchist Black Cross reiterated the idea that the police are serving the interests of developers and other businesses that are currently attempting to gentrify this part of the city in the Central East Side.
what the city does is they do cycles of, you know, disinvestment, and then blight clearance and reinvestment time and time again. You know, you look at 10, 20 years ago, inner city Portland was a place that was highly stigmatized. The houses were, older houses that now have all been redone. And now in the East Portland back then was the, you know, upscale white suburb. And now they flipped the switch. You know, all those houses out there are now old, ran down, ranch-style houses. Everything in the inner city has been redone. So, you know, they come in and the city starts this cycle of gentrification and urban renewal, you know. And so they take all this resources out of a neighborhood, you know, and then they bring in the cops, start, you know, harassing the people that they don't see as the legitimate members of the community, like the homeless and people of color, start terrorizing them so people leave on their own. And then the rates start going up as they start reinvesting community resources, improving the neighborhood. And then they're pushed out to the east side. And now you look at the east side, there's a new urban renewal area started by the Portland Development Commission, the historical racist organization responsible for blight clearance after blight clearance. And, you know, these things are connected to what we're seeing with the massive police killings with, across the country against people of color. You know, I think it's connected to the gentrification, you know, just as it was back in the 60s.
The Portland Anarchist Black Cross, Multnomah County Cop Watch, Don't Shoot Portland, and Right to Survive are working on ways to fight this new campaign of what they term classist displacement. They have created a text message alert system and are asking for people to show up and do some cop watching when the raids take place, and to provide assistance to people losing their belongings in the raids. More information can be found on the Facebook event page, Stop the Sweeps. For KBOO News, I'm Jenka Soderberg.
Senate Bill 2007, also known as the Paycheck Fairness Act, passed the Oregon Senate today. The bill would ban employers from punishing workers for talking to each other about their wages and working conditions. Representative Jessica Peterson described the bill at a public hearing earlier this month.
With House Bill 2007, we strengthen our equal pay laws so that if an employee decides to share information about their salary with their coworkers, they won't be able to suffer retaliation at the hands of their employer. We know that wage transparency is a proven strategy for addressing the wage gap, and there's actually research done that proves that this is something that's actually beneficial to employers, too. In businesses where they do have wage transparency policies, businesses have improved staff retention rates, increased workplace efficiency and worker retention, and there's also greater trust between employers and employees.
In 2014, the Oregon Council on Civil Rights estimated that women, on average, earned 77 cents for every dollar earned by a man. They also estimated that women of color earned even less, only 58 cents on the dollar. Proponents of the bill say that if employees can talk to one another about their pay, it will drive employers to pay women as much as they pay men. Opponents say that it exposes employers to too much liability and drives businesses out of Oregon. The bill passed the Senate today on a party line vote and is headed for Kate Brown's desk.
Thursday afternoon on the Portland State University park blocks, the group Strike Debt Portland held a debtors assembly to address the burden of student debt. Staff, students, and activists gathered to share their struggles with debt and to express solidarity. We attended the assembly to bring you their voices.
Jose Padin, I'm in the Department of Sociology. I'm also a proud member and one of the volunteer elected leaders in my faculty union. We are here today, faculty, students, staff, everyone, because we know that higher education is a human right and a civil right. And when the quality of higher education that you get access to depends on your class or your income, we don't have equal rights. We can take it or we can fight back, and we're here to fight back. We have found that too much of what the university spends is indefensible. It's not going directly to your education, and you should not be incurring debt for that.
My name's Ryan, and I'm a debtor. My partner's a debtor. I got my graduate degree from here, and I've taught here since 2009. 9, and like many of my fellow teachers at this university, does clearly not pay enough for me to pay back my debt. Student debt is unique in that it's solid in a way that the other debts are. You can't dispose of it through bankruptcy. You can't transfer it to someone that's willing to take that debt on for you. But we can also let non-monetary obligations to one another give shape to a new future, especially to those who the labor made it possible for us to live as we do now. A big part of this is acknowledging that we owe the financial establishment nothing.
The way that debt functions for many people, including myself, is that it creates a lot of shame. It makes you want to stay quiet and stay by yourself because it's really embarrassing. It feels like a failure. So what I want to do with you guys today is sort of counter this feeling of failure and isolation. Look around because you're surrounded by your community and they are who you owe your debts to, not to any banks, corporations, companies.
My name is Casey. I'm a student here at Portland State in the film department.
Film!
I'm also a disabled veteran who went to Iraq twice. Part of that reason that I went to Iraq was so that I could afford to come here and join you lovely people without finding myself in debt. Well, guess what? Even the Montgomery GI Bill isn't enough to get through school, especially if you're trying to go beyond a four-year degree. There are 1,000 different ways where that money will disappear, you'll get shortchanged. If you have any kind of personal problems like PTSD from going to Iraq, they will give you no sympathy. So as I stand here before you today, I find myself $25,000 in debt after risking my life so that I could come here and go to school. Does that make sense to you? I didn't think so either.
My name is Mary Sikorov. I am adjunct faculty in the World Languages Department. Support your faculty because the teaching conditions of our faculty are the learning conditions of our students. We're in this together.
We've been organizing for over a year now, having debtors assemblies about all myths and stigmas surrounding debt.
Oh, I don't want debt anymore. We don't want debt anymore. We don't want debt anymore. We're gonna strike it away.
That coverage was brought to you by KABU reporter Jared Dantzler.
Another cyclist was hit by a motor vehicle in southeast Portland this morning, but thankfully this time the injuries are not serious or fatal. According to the Portland Mercury, Peter Anderson was struck by a Jeep while riding north on Southeast 26th Avenue and Powell Boulevard. He is currently being treated for non-life-threatening injuries. This marks the second collision at a major intersection in 3 days. On Wednesday, 22-year-old Mark Angeles was killed by a tow truck at Southeast Cesar Chavez Avenue and Gladstone. Local cycling activists are riding in solidarity today along Southeast Gladstone and Powell Boulevards and Southeast Cesar Chavez Avenue. The event began at 4:30 p.m. this afternoon.
The TriMet Transit Board passed a $510 million budget on Wednesday. The budget includes new buses and increased service on weekends, but it also includes fare increases for some of Oregon's most vulnerable people. Starting on September 1st, the Honored Citizen fare will rise by 25%. People over the age of 65, people on Medicare, and people with disabilities will pay $1.25 instead of $1. Monthly passes will also go up to $2. We spoke with KABU's own Grace Eagle-Reed to learn more about the challenges facing people with disabilities here in Portland.
To start off, could you describe some of the challenges facing people with disabilities who rely on TriMet?
Of course, there was a fare increase, and for the people who are on such a tight budget, that unto itself, of course, is a problem. Although I will say TriMet Lyft worked very closely with at City Hall with homeless and disabled and the marginalized, so-called, those folks, and we're down to they put on their access transit fare relief. They have a budget, which anybody can go to see the budget. And the 1 month and the 1 day passes and so on are actually pretty reasonable, although they did have an increase. Of course, they have to have an increase, so that's just the way life is. But the one thing that seems to be the worst situation that, in fact, see, it looks, things look good on a piece of paper, but when you actually try to access them and they don't work, that is the problem, and that's the stuff that needs to continue to be, you know, talked about and worked with, and I appreciate being on the show for this.
Could you give me a specific example?
Yes, I can. There is a big emphasis on transit relief. In other words, ride connection. Now there are a few programs that have that supplement low income and especially handicapped people. Ride connection being one of them, which is an addendum. It's an application for access transit. And it's TriMet Ride Connection. So you sign up and you prove your handicap. You know, you got to get a letter from your doctor and so on and so on. And you put your contract in or your application in, and you say, Ride Connection, come and get me. I'm downtown, and I need to get over to wherever, to my doctor's appointment, wherever. And Ride Connection used to do that. And now, because people downtown have access to public transportation, buses, trolleys, and the MAX lines, Ride Connection no longer comes and picks you up for any of that. Now, so that's one of the inconveniences. And yet people are still calling Ride Connection, can you come and pick me up, and so on.
So people are calling Ride Connection and are being told, we don't have this program anymore. You'll have to use TriMet to get over.
Their priority is for people that don't have this other form of transportation. And frankly, you can see that it's okay. It's good. They're right. We do have a lot of transit. For me, I can't, for instance, I'm in a wheelchair. I'm in a scooter, actually. And I cannot take the bus because the scooter's too big to go on the bus. And I have a situation with my back that I cannot possibly get on a bus. And they kind of jerk you around. You know, the buses are pretty hard to ride. And so I cannot be on a bus to go anywhere. So my transportation, because Ride Connection will no longer come downtown and get me, because I'm not in a category where they can come and get me. In other words, I can get up out of my chair and transfer to a seat. I'm not grossly mentally ill. I'm not. They will pick certain people up, but they can't. I can no longer use Ride Connection.
Right.
And that's okay because I have to find other ways. For instance, I can't get to KBOO. Because I don't have Ride Connection from here. So I have a friend that comes and fetches me and takes me over.
Right. And in addition to that, of course, the fares are increasing for people with disabilities across the area.
Yes.
Grace Eagle Reed is the host of Disability Awareness right here at KBOO. It airs every last Monday of the month at 11 a.m. Grace, thank you so much.
I thank you, sir. Thank you.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses on at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is partly cloudy, with a high of 81 and a low of 56. Today in history, in 1942, Adolf Hitler ordered all Jews in occupied Paris to wear yellow Stars of David on their coats. The order was the beginning of the persecution and massacre of Jews during World War II. The quote of the day is from Wallace Stegner. Home is a notion that only nations of the homeless fully appreciate, and only the uprooted can comprehend.
It's 5:23 p.m., time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
As everyone who travels a lot soon learns, when you stay in the hotels of the big chains, it's easy to forget where you are, since they're all alike, offering all the charm of No Place USA. This disorienting sameness has become more dizzying in recent years as the chains have merged and conglomerated. Weary travelers might choose to stay overnight in one of the Residence Inn hotels, or a Courtyard, the Town Place Suites, or even splurge for a night in a ritzy Ritz-Carlton. In fact, though, you're in a Marriott, the $14 billion a year combine that owns all of the above chains, along with 15 others. Marriott is among the world's 10 largest hotel operators that have a combined 113 different chains in their crowded stable of brand names. Naturally, as uniformity and conglomeration have taken over the industry, a consumer rebellion has erupted, with more and more travelers, especially younger ones, seeking out independent hotels, unique inns, and local B&Bs. They prefer the uncorporate places that have cool names like The Moxie, Canopy, and Vibe. But, oh crud, guess what? All three of those are chains of hip hotels that opened in the past year and are owned respectively by Marriott, Hilton, and Best Western. Known in the industry as lifestyle hotels, these fake independent lodgings are the hot new niche for mega conglomerates trying to nab travelers in search of authenticity. The big hotel chains are in the business of pretending they aren't big chains, says Pauline Frommer, editor of the well-regarded Frommer's Travel Guides. They want you to think they are boutiques. This is Jim Hightower saying, sneaky. But do they think that duping customers is a good business strategy? Not only will we dupees quickly see that we're being sold plastic authenticity, but we'll also be PO'd about it. Good luck with that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
The Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, plans to expand internet access to people living near the poverty line. The expansion would come through a government subsidy program called Lifeline, a program established in the 1960s. The program would provide low-income Americans with basic communication abilities, like access to an affordable phone. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler also wants to include access to the internet in the basic communication available. The standard Lifeline monthly subsidy of $9.25 a month would not increase. People receiving the subsidy would now have the choice to use it for a telephone or internet service. According to the FCC, fewer than half of households making $25,000 a year or less have access to the internet. And access to the internet is now more important than ever. 80% of job openings from the nation's largest companies are posted online. If the expansion passes, people must make no more than 135% of the poverty line or receive assistance from Medicaid and food stamps in order to be eligible. The Senate is scheduled to vote on the expansion next month.
A U.S. federal appeals court has struck down Idaho's ban on late-term abortions. The case is part of a civil lawsuit brought by a woman named Jenny Lee McCormick. McCormick challenged Idaho's abortion law after a local prosecutor filed criminal charges against her for self-inducing an abortion. Bans on abortions after 20 weeks have been passed in 12 different states since 2010. The U.S. House of Representatives also voted on its own ban earlier this month, though President Obama has said he will veto the bill. In a unanimous decision today, the Ninth Circuit Court ruled that Idaho's abortion ban was unconstitutional.
Fears about African immigrants among some of Finland's right-wing politicians prompted an extreme proposal by a member of Helsinki's local government today. Deputy City Councilor Olli Sademies called for African immigrants to be subjected to forced sterilization. He alleged that Africans have so many children that they would cause a, quote, total collapse of Finland's social security system, and an echo of concerns that have been voiced about immigration throughout Europe and in the U.S. Some members of his Finns party, though generally anti-immigration, rushed to distance themselves from his comments. Seppo Kanerva, leader of the party in the Helsinki Council, called the remarks, quote, completely mad, and compared them to Nazi policies. A close parallel would be Nazi Germany's Aktion T4, which ordered the sterilization and murder of the physically and mentally disabled under a similar rationale, that they were a burden on state resources. Forced sterilizations were also carried out elsewhere in Europe and in the U.S. In the early 20th century, primarily in mental health institutions, though sometimes on racial or other grounds under a now discredited theory of eugenics. Sademes would not back down from his position in spite of his party's criticism, claiming there was no better alternative. This is not the first time a member of the Finns Party made a proposal evocative of Nazism. In 2012, Finns Party parliamentary assistant Helena Aronen suggested that immigrants should be forced to wear marks on their sleeves, or armbands, showing their country of origin. UN human rights chief Zeid Rail al-Hussein also compared such views to Nazi ideology.
Sepp Blatter was re-elected as president of FIFA, the World Soccer Organization, despite recent discoveries of widespread corruption. Blatter was re-elected in the wake of several international scandals. This includes the arrest of 14 top officials of FIFA on corruption and the deaths of hundreds of workers involved in building the World Cup stadium in Qatar, home to the 2022 World Cup. Gearing up for his 18th year in office, Blatter vows to, quote, do a good job together, end quote.
A Palestinian hunger strike has entered, hunger striker has entered his 25th day without food and is unable to move or stand up. Kader Adnan is a prisoner held by Israeli authorities for the past year without charges or trial. He is protesting the so-called administrative detention imposed by Israeli authorities, which is used to hold Palestinians indefinitely without having a day in court or knowing why they are being held. This is the second time that Kader Adnan has gone on an extended hunger strike. While imprisoned previously in 2012, he gained international publicity for his 66-day hunger strike. He almost died during that strike, according to medical professionals, and he has undertaken the current hunger strike with the intention that he will continue until death unless the Israeli